Hi everyone, my name's Anne-Marie and I'm an addict.
Hi Anne-Marie.
Can I book a
fish? It's just been like kind of a evening. God. Thanks Mickey. Thanks for the opportunity and just to try and calm down actually. I took the day off work today, and actually that was a bad move, really, because my brain's been like, it started off as a sort of slow train, and by the time I've arrived here, I feel like an express, you know, and that difficulty of, and the other thing is that when I sat down, Mickey, when he told me about tonight, never said the order that we were sharing, and because we did it before, I thought we automatically swapped. So when I sat down next to Claire, she sort of just casually mentioned, you know, you're doing 40 minutes. And I was like, what? Isn't Mickey doing 40 minutes this year? And she's like, no. So, you know, and I've spent the whole day rehearsing 15 minutes precisely. And, you know, to come in and 5 minutes after you arrive. And it's a long time to share for. And this clock doesn't move. I just said to Annie, are you sure it's working? I feel incredibly nervous, to the point that, you know, I'm not breathing even properly at the moment. My rhythm has gone. I feel very stressed and doesn't seem to get easier sharing, actually. In this circumstance, it's much easier from the floor when you can be spontaneous, share by choice, sort of. I am, like many other people, my journey to NA has been up and down, and I originally came to NA in 1988, and oddly enough, actually, because I was a Shaftesbury Avenue user, you know, there used to be a chemist on that road, and we used to hang out there, and I don't even recognise the West End anymore compared to how it used to be, you know, and you had private doctors that you went to then for your scripts, you know, and it's even different drugs now on the street, you know, it seems like. I can remember too at certain times when people would come in and start talking about drugs, I'd be like, shit, you know, I came in too soon. I wasn't out there too, because I wasn't an ecstasy girl, you know, it wasn't really out there, and it was like, damn, all this happy drug, you know, that I've missed out on. But, you know, as you stay around longer, you soon start to see that, you know, the consequences of drug addiction, no matter what you take, is the same. And my journey, you know, I wasn't somebody that arrived, you know, I often say this, I didn't come into the fellowship and sort of, you know, I know that some people do. There's this great sense of relief that you've arrived and it feels like home. No, you know, I wasn't wearing no red shoes, clicking my heels going, you know, this feels like home or... not at all. I arrived here, I was suspicious, full of rage, full of, you know, I didn't believe that I really had a drug problem. I thought I had a, you know, a family problem, a life problem, a relationship problem. You know, it wasn't drugs. I just took drugs to try and make those things work. And, you know, and what happened is that, like anything, you know, I'm somebody that had lots of different rock bottoms with different drugs that I took. You know, I've had different drugs of choice, and I'd reach a rock bottom on them, and then something else would be introduced, and I'd take that. You know, and so, you know, it kind of progressed. But what happened is, for years, I kind of functioned, and that really kept me in a place of huge denial, really, because I kept thinking that because I could maintain a job for a short, you know, be it months or, you know, it felt as though it was stable. And And the fact is that, you know, none of that was really true. But such was my distortion, you know, my reality, that, you know, I believed that I was still okay. And of course, I hung out with people that used, and, you know, we all seemed to do the same thing. So there wasn't really, didn't feel like there was any comparisons. And, you know, for a fair amount of years, I did enjoy, you know, taking drugs. I have to say, I did. I partied hard. You know, I remember being, I was a Ronnie Scott girl fan, you know, but of course, it's one of those things that the using started maybe, you know, originally on a Friday night. And before I know it, you know, Friday, it was every day, you know, it was just one continuous big weekend. And then gaps start to miss, and you know, my life began to become affected, and so did everyone else around me. I had no understanding of, and never heard of a 12-step program. You know, even the language in NA was a mystery to me. You know, that you know, the word powerless and the word unmanageable, you know, I it's one of my favourite words today, but you know, at the time, you know, it's like, how does that describe my addiction? Powerless. You know, what the hell does that mean? You know, and we admitted we were powerless over our addiction. It sounds so quaint, you know. It's like, that's just not the way I took drugs. You know, and then, you know, we came to believe. You know, I didn't have a problem with the word God. My conception of a God was that of religion. I have to say, I didn't get confused coming here believing that this was a religious program. I never did get that vibe. What I did have difficulty believing in, though, was something greater than myself, because I believed that God was responsible for putting me where I was. And so, you know, the person I believed in was the person that had punished me, caused my drug addiction, caused my marriage to break up, you know, caused, you know, all those things, my family, you know, telling me, you know, leave, get out. The longer I stayed around, is the more I learnt. I'm not somebody that got the message straight away. You know, talk about put yourself through pain and misery. I stayed in the fellowship for 3 years, abstinent. You know, and I really do know the difference between today being abstinent and being in recovery. And I'm somebody that came to meetings. You know, I was involved. Didn't mean a thing, you know, involved. It's that thing. I remember hearing a speaker a long time ago saying, if you put a chair in a chicken house, does it become a chicken? And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, wow. You put a chair in a chicken house, you know. And of course it doesn't. He says it's just a chair in a chicken house, you know. And I love that, because what, you know, Much later on, I realised that, you know, I was just a bum on a seat in a meeting. I wasn't actually in recovery. It took me some time to kind of, you know, really understand what it was that I needed to do. And, you know, and all those fantastic words like surrender and, you know, I didn't know how to do that, to be honest. You know, I remember... You know, so I relapsed after 3 years, and then, you know, I went out for, I don't know how long, maybe about 6-7 months. It didn't improve. You know, it got worse. Came back, put myself through another grueling 18 months. You know, I was like, can't talk about the suffering addict. That's another word for suffering addict. You know, that you can be abstinent and in the fellowship and be in enormous pain because you're not doing anything different. And that's what I kept doing. I kept coming back into the rooms, but not changing anything, not being honest, not being open. And I think that was my biggest barrier, honesty. So caught up in what people thought about me, had no idea how to be able to expose the inside to the outside. Didn't know how to let people close to me. I didn't know how to ask for help. I would say it. I would try and fake it desperately. But, you know, the fact is I hadn't really, you know, as they say, I hadn't really given in. I had, you know, and that's another way, you know, reservation. You know, what's reservation? I heard that flung around so many times. You know, I had a sponsor. you know, I'd be working through the steps, it'd be, but still obsessing about using. You know, that is a really horrible place to be in, you know. And if, you know, and if anybody's in the room that's new and is in that place, you know, I would just say, you know, do keep coming back. And because that's what I did. I just kept coming back, and it did change for me. You know, today it took me ages. You know, that first time clean birthday. My first time clean birthday was July. The date was July the 7th, and after I lost that, you know, that sort of. I didn't want to celebrate any other clean times. It, you know, it was like it had no significance. And now looking back on that, it was because I was scared. I was actually scared to sort of even have a birthday or an anniversary in case I would lose it again. And the essence of, you know, keeping it in the day. My life has changed enormously. You know, after relapsing after that 18 months, I came back into the fellowship in 19... See, that just goes through, doesn't it? What, 14 years ago. And it was a London convention coming round, and I'll never forget, because obviously I'd made friends. I had people that I knew in the rooms, and they knew that I was using, and they called, and they said, you know, Anne-Marie, you know, there's a convention going on at Holland Park. Come to the convention. And I did, and I remember that Friday... And prior to the convention, you know, many of my peer group from previously coming to my home, really supporting me to get clean, you know, staying with me. I stayed at home, people stayed round, you know, and I really experienced the true sense of the word fellowship and that unconditional support. I did go to the convention, and I got my first day clean that Friday. And... you know, and I was, you know, I was absolutely in awe. You know, for the first time, it felt like my ears were open. You know, I was listening. You know, I was totally inspired. And I think what happened was, I wanted what other people had. That was the main thing. And I suppose, you know, isn't it, you know, hindsight's great, isn't it? You know, if I could have only had it then. But you know, looking back. You know, I didn't want what other people had. You know, I wanted drugs, and it was that simple. And so, you know, that's why I couldn't stay clean, because, you know, the obsession would take over, you know, the compulsion would step in, and you know, I'd try and fight it, but, you know, I'd be in a meeting, and know how am I going to get through the rest of the evening. I knew that I would not leave, get home and stay clean. You know, Mickey said, you know, when he ended, you know, today he knows that he's going to get home safely tonight, and without a shadow of a doubt he will be clean. And today I know that. And what a relief that is. What a burden, you know, that comes off your shoulders when you know that sort of, you know, that instinct. But when you don't, and you're caught up in that fear and knowing just where it's going to lead you, because that's the other thing. Once you've been in the rooms and that denial's been smashed, you know, when they talk about, you know, a head or a gut full of NA you know, and you're trying to mix the two, you know, so you've got drugs swirling around in your head, I want to use, and that little voice is going, you know, you're powerless. Get to a meeting. No, take drugs. No, yes, no, yes. You know, I give in. You know, and I'd go with the drugs. You know, because I left that convention that weekend carrying the NA flag, going, I'm going to stay clean. I'm going to be a world convention speaker. You know. You know, at regional or group level, 3 days clean, I want to be, hey, United States, here I come. You know, it's because I heard an American speaker. So, you know, that's where it goes, isn't it? You know, straight in the ego. But fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. No, you know, I never have been a World Convention speaker. But, you know, it was a great dream to have at that time. And you know, and I still have friends from my peer group then, and more. And I suppose that the most refreshing thing for me about being clean is actually the simplicity of it all now. Is that, you know, the suggestions actually are really quite simple. You know, don't pick up. You know, get to a meeting. And be honest, open and willing. And I think, you know, that was the difficulty. I was doing those things without being honest. I was doing those things and I had no willingness. And I certainly wasn't open. I didn't even know what the word meant. And that's taken time, actually, to, you know, work on becoming a person and gaining some respect for myself. Recovery isn't, you know, all roses. It, you know, none of us know actually what's going to happen really tomorrow. And I've had my fair share of, you know, emotional rock bottoms during my, you know, journey in recovery. And I feel I've been tested sometimes, you know, and sometimes get back to that place of, why is this happening? You know, and dear God, why are you doing this to me again? But I call it, the difference today is, you know, I know that that's not actually true, and we go back to that wonderful word. You know, I'm actually powerless over certain events now that happen in my life. I'm powerless over, you know, all those things, my family, and once I realise that I'm in that control seat and I try to get back out of it, you know, my life comes back to a place of you know, some sort of calm, really, and being able to let go, because I think that's the biggest thing for me. You know, letting go of that lifestyle felt really hard, because it was it's what gave me my identity, you know. And then all of a sudden, who the hell was I? You know, who was this person? I had no sense of what a female was, being a woman, a mother. You know, my son was originally 6 when I first came into recovery, 9 when I eventually stayed clean, and he's 26 now, and I have 2 grandchildren, and you know, 1 of 5 and 1 will be 2 in October. I haven't seen my second grandchild at all, you know, and I still have family members that are in active addiction, and it's difficult. It's difficult because I'm at that place where there's nothing I can do. I have to stand back. But I get scared because I think that, you know, we all know that this illness takes lives. And I suppose that's my biggest fear, is that I will lose my brother to this addiction. But there's nothing I can do about it. And my brother was in the fellowship. We were very close, and we still are. It's just very difficult to have an intimate relationship with somebody that's using. It's very much on their terms, and I really see how selfish, you know, the illness makes us become. Positively, I am able to support my family today. I mean, that's the difference. You know, I'm able to, you know, I've got all the things that I didn't have that we learn about in here. You know, being able to, you know, I know where my boundaries lie. I know my limitations. I know my capabilities today. And they are, you know, they move around. You know, some days I'm stronger than others. And some days I'm more capable than other times, you know, and it depends on, you know, what's happening in my life. But it's having that awareness, and I wouldn't have got that if it wasn't for working a 12-step program. And I suppose that's maybe the area that I'll talk a bit now, is that, you know, my working a 12-step program and getting an understanding, I think the first 3 steps for me in particular were crucial, because they really gave me an understanding of where my using took me, what I needed to do if I wanted to stay stopped, and how I was going to build on the information that had been given to me. And I think that, you know, I've just had visions there of you know, my sponsor at the time, you know, saying, you know, when I had it written down, and it'd be like half a page, and she'd go, what's that? And I'd be like, that's my step work. And her just sort of looking at me, you know, like, it looks like you really put some effort into that, Anne-Marie. And, you know, that thing of, why have I got to write this? You know, why can't we just compensate? You know, can't we talk through it? You know, having to read the literature, it's like, you know, please, you know, can't I just read a chapter, the one that suits me, or, you know, that thing, shortcuts, you know. You know, telling, you know, having to include all those things, you know, step meetings, you know, tradition meetings, being part of service, you know, on a regular basis. Service was a huge, huge part of my journey in recovery, and kept me absolutely rooted. It gave me the ability to learn the sort of clockworks as well of NA, you know, not just being, again, a bum. A seat, a bum, yeah, that sounds about right. A person sitting in a meeting. But it gave me the understanding of how much hard work, actually, people put in to make sure that we have a meeting to attend, you know. I mean, I went to a meeting the other day, and the guy was pissing down with rain, and the greeter was outside in the rain with the umbrella, you know, and I was just thinking, God, that's a commitment, because I... You know, and a really fantastic hug, you know, to come into the meeting. I just think I was too selfish back in that, you know, to do that sort of thing. You know, no, I'd be the one that probably wants to serve the tea and hide behind the urn, you know. So those are the things that gave me my communication skills. They gave me... they taught me about respecting others, about tolerance. Because if anybody is in service and you are, you know, it's a bunch of people that, you know, you don't choose. You know, how you get selected is amazing. And you've all got to be able to agree and come to sort of, you know, some sort of mutual agreement about things and get it all going. And that's how NA works. And it's absolutely, it still fascinates me, you know, that, you know, that we'd all be still, we're all still sitting here and, you know, and conventions happen and, you know, all the different events that go on, you know, from the lifestyles that we've led, I think. And I never want to lose sight of being fascinated, you know, or lose my inspiration for being clean. I think the moment I lose that, you know, then I will allow other... I think I've just opened the door, really, for other, you know, the desire probably to use, or, you know, just where I've been in hell before, and I just don't want to go back there. So I'm just really conscious today of the things that I need to do to stay well. It's an ongoing process, you know. Each day, I can't afford to take things for granted. What I didn't say was that the last day I used before that convention, and it was, you know, and obviously it was months before I got to the convention, but, you know, I was smoking in my home alone, and I was somebody that had panic attacks on a regular basis, and I used to run off to A&E, and it got to the point where I'd get to A&E and think I was having a heart attack, and I'd be like, nurse, help me, I'm dying. And then I'd, you know, I'd leave the hospital because they'd tell me I was fine. And I'd get, you know, maybe half a mile down the road, and again, it got to the point where I'd start going to hospitals almost 5 miles apart, because it got to the point where they recognised me in A&E, and it was like, that bloody woman again. And, you know, so that... But the reassurance I needed for someone to tell me, you're not having a heart attack, Anne-Marie, you're going to be okay. And the night that I did have a heart attack, there's no room, there's no space, there's no time for you to go, I'm going to go to A&E, I'm going to get downstairs, is this a panic attack, is it a heart attack, because it's like instant. And, you know, I just remember, the visions of that are still so vivid in my memory. You know, I barely exhaled. And, you know, I just felt the gripping pain down my arm and through my chest. And I don't know how I survived. I really don't, especially being on my own. I did manage to open my door, obviously. I don't remember any of that, but I did. And I woke up, obviously, in A&E. And, you know, go there every day. You know, I'm having a heart attack. You know, and the day that I wake up, I've had one and don't know I've had one. Why am I here? You know, like. But my son was next to me and sort of saying, you know, like, Mum, you know, who would have looked after me? You know, and that thing, you know, because obviously they'd been to my home, all the apparatus was out, you know, ooh, that horrible feeling when you've just really been caught. I mean, you know, everybody knows you've been using anyway. You know, what difference does it make if they found a bloody crack pipe and whatever in your house? I don't know why I feel so ashamed of that, you know. It was, everybody knew. Even neighbours knew. Everybody bloody knew. But I thought they didn't. And I thought I had a respectable air about me still, you know. I know that, and that, you know, and then where does that take us? You know, we're insane, you know, and we are when we're in that, you know, that distortion, you know, when we believe that we're okay. And that morning, that was when I decided, you know, that I wouldn't use crack again, because that was my problem. And I didn't use crack again after a heart attack. I didn't visit A&E again after that night. But my drug use didn't stop that night. And then it was a couple of months later. It did scare the hell out of me. I think that's what happened. The panic attacks did continue. You know, and it's a memory. You know, my son and I talk about that stuff today. And you know, and the reality too is that, you know, my using has affected family, and there have been consequences. You know, really, the truth is that as much as I don't, you know, I know we're not responsible today, or you know, and people say, you know, you shouldn't feel guilty, and but I think that's an area for me that I'm still working on. I have to say, I haven't quite really forgiven myself. I don't think. To that level, I haven't really got that complete level of acceptance as far as my son's concerned. You know, and that's the Achilles heel. Not my reservation, I have to say, because that's been tested as far as my son's concerned, but it is the Achilles heel of my recovery. It's because I adore him to bits and I want the best for him, and he doesn't want what I want for him, you know. Surprise, surprise. But you know, in terms of having my family back in my life, I couldn't ask for more. I would never have thought that possible. You know, my mother is from Trinidad and from the Caribbean, and you know, and there was, you know, tough love, Christ Almighty. You know, it was just my stuff was in black bags, and it was get the hell out. You know, and. And I thank her really for that today, because, you know, anyhow, I think I'd have been able to stay at home and continue using. I wouldn't be here now, I don't believe. So it sped things up. In terms of, you know, being my wildest dreams, you know, I don't measure that today in any particular way other than, you know, than in those simple terms. You know, I feel grateful to be alive. I feel blessed that I'm somebody that was able to get the message, be able to express a message, that I am a mother today, I'm a grandmother, I'm a daughter, I have wonderful friends, I'm an employable person. You know, those just, when you come in and if you think, you know, or the way I did, in my first year that just wasn't conceivable. You know, it wasn't conceivable getting clean, let alone being able to have any, you know, any other desires in life. I couldn't get beyond sort of staying clean. It just didn't seem possible to have dreams, really. And it's great today to have dreams and plan, you know, and some dreams come true and some don't. And And I remain a committed member of NA. You know, I do try to, you know, I don't get it right all the time, but I try to practice these principles, really. You know, I can't believe that it's a year ago that Mickey and I were here, you know, and how fast time flies. And you know, Mickey and I were sort of talking. He met me at the station. And you know, the circumstances under which I met Mickey, and very, very dear to my heart, really, and was somebody that was, yeah, we were talking the other day, you know, I always say Nicky has one of these, you know, he comes up with these lovely sort of one-liners, and they're just amazing. I, you know, no one else can come out with them, and they always make such sense. You know, it's a bit like the chair in the chicken house. Mickey comes out with things like that, you know. And you know, and I think, you know, over that, it shows me that, you know, over time, if you keep doing what's necessary and you do the right things, you invite people into your life. You know, so my support network has grown. You know, I know that there are people that I can phone at any time. You know, I went for, where I took the day off today, I thought, you know, yeah, I'm going to have a chilled out day. Yeah, I'm going to go for some acupuncture. Which I did. What a waste of time that was. I could hear some guy snoring in the next room. He was clearly chilled. You know, and I'm sitting there with pins in me thinking about tonight. You know. Not relaxing at all. And he said, quarter past eight. It's nearly quarter past eight, and I don't know what else to say, so I'm not going to say any more and just hope that, you know, somebody has got something from what I shared. Thank you.